News time, David.
Oh, boy.
Are
we
ready
to
get into this?
Here we go.
It's a lot.
This is going to be a mess. Let's do it.
What do we even talk about? What do we even call this?
How do we even start?
Hey, guys. It's the fourth week of January. David, what time is it?
Ryan. It's the Friday weekly roll-up, where we roll up the entire week in crypto, which is always an ambitious endeavor, especially this week. Some drama has gone on this week, so we're going to cover all of that and more because it's the Friday Bankless weekly roll-up.
I don't know where to start with this roll-up, David, but I think it's got to be somewhere with bear market, okay? Because we've been feeling some bear market vibes after we hit the stop record button after the last podcast. Something happened in the market.
Right.
We're going to discuss it. It was not good. It was down only, it felt like.
It was the biggest oof we've seen thus far.
Yes. Stacked oofs. Massive raises as well. That's still happening, so we'll talk about that. ARK Investments. Kathy Wood's firm has been on the podcast. She just put out some insane price targets for Bitcoin and ETH. I guess they're not bullish. We'll talk about that report. Pretty
awesome.
They're
not bearish. They are very bullish.
Yes. Excuse me. They are not bearish. They are very bullish. Hayden Adams got canceled by his bank. Is Hayden Adams going bankless? We'll talk about that too.
Forced banklessness.
And what about this last one? This is some of the drama you were alluding to. Man, a lot of different names here. Blast from the past. Quadriga was a Canadian exchange. Apparently, the co-founder of the shady exchange popped up on the radar. He's a multi-sig manager for some pretty large DeFi projects.
Yeah.
Who knew? We got to discuss that as well.
An ex-convicted felon for identity theft is now discovered as the Anon multi-sig signer for the Wonderland project. And a lot of drama is currently unfolding as Ryan and I were prepping this agenda. So we're going to do our best to unpack all of that story. It's some drama.
This is crypto, right? It's like bear bull markets, you know, changing the world, all this amazing thing, people making money. And then we've got like just entertainment.
Just so straight shenanigans.
Some people are here for the money. Some people are here for the tech. Some people are here for the political change. Some people are just here for like the popcorn and entertainment, man, because that happens on a weekly basis as well. And I feel like it's one of those weeks too.
Yeah. So definitely grab your coffee because we have a lot to go through. And if it's for some reason in the evening time for you, also grab the popcorn because it's going to be one of those.
Coffee and popcorn bowl. All right, we got to start here, David, because you know the last couple of roll-ups we've been talking about tax optimization stuff, and I caught this from Odell Beckham Jr.
You know who that is, Ryan?
He's one of my favorite athletes. As you know, David,
he plays sports.
Okay, he plays sports. Well, he started getting his sports paycheck in Bitcoin. I think this happened last year, maybe the year before. Anyway, here is a tweet from an article. On November 12th, Odell Beckham Jr. signed a deal with the Rams worth $750K.
Nice.
He announced he would take that in Bitcoin.
Ooh, also nice.
At that time, Bitcoin was worth $64,000. Today, it's worth $35,000. Today, that deal is worth $412,000. That's where things get interesting.
So he lost 50% because Bitcoin went down. But, you know, holders are holders. Bitcoiners are Bitcoiners.
Still okay. One Bitcoin equals one Bitcoin. But here's the problem, okay? It's taxes come in, David. Odell will be taxed on the $750K. And the federal and California state tax is about 50%. So that means net, Odell has only made $35,000. Or 35K, excuse me, from the Rams contract this year.
So he signed a deal for $750,000, and his net on that is going to be $35,000 because, Ryan, you know what he didn't do? He did not optimize his taxes.
He did not optimize his taxes, David. That's why we talk about this. And you know what? I'm just going to fit this in because crypto IRA is something that I think people need to have. And this wouldn't have worked for Odell Jr.'s case, but this could work if you're a retail investor because it is a tax-free account, tax-deferred until you retire. So any trades in and out, any income you receive to this account, any staking, anything like that is tax-free. You don't have to pay it. And I've set this up a couple of years ago. It was a lot harder back then, but crypto IRA, Alto IRA has created an easy button for this. So I encourage everyone listening as sort of a tax optimizer reminder, don't be like Odell Beckham, okay? Figure out your taxes. This is one step you can take. It's one small step you can take. Open up a crypto IRA, start depositing, roll over a previous 401k, start depositing, turn that into crypto, and you don't have to worry about this. You don't have to pay taxes. You can find out more at altoira.com/bankless and check that out. There you go. Tax lesson for the day.
Yeah. Don't lose 95% of your paycheck to depreciating crypto and taxes.
That's such a bummer, man. Sorry, Odell. Sorry that happened.
Sorry, guy.
Let's talk about markets, though, David. This is the sad music, bear territory. We are down, down, down. What's Bitcoin showing us?
Bitcoin started the week at $43,000 and has gone down 12%, hit a low of $33,500, so almost down a whole $10,000, and is currently at the price of $36,200. Oof.
It gets worse.
Ether. It gets worse. Ether started the week at $3,250, hit a low of $2,220, so down a full $1,000 on the week. We are currently clocking in at $2,450, down a massive 20% on the week. Rut row.
We'll take a look at that from all-time highs in just a minute here, too. So bad going down, people feeling bearish. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people have started capitulating and saying that this is a bear market. Maybe we should define that in a little bit. But before we do, let's talk about a few more numbers here. ETH Bitcoin ratio is going down as well. What happened this week?
Yeah, when markets go down, the ETH BTC ratio goes down. We started the week at 0.075. We are currently at 0.067. So down a pretty significant chunk on the 7-day.
Bear market indicator as well. And the BED index, it's got to be a story of down as well.
Yeah, started the week at $123, currently clocking in at $98. Oh, wow. It's up from when I wrote down these notes, but still down 13.6% on the week.
Not as down bad as ETH is, but still down on the week. So let's talk about this. I put out this Twitter survey. Are we in a bear market now? 60% of those answered said yes. 40% said no. What do you think, David? Are we in a bear market?
I don't actually think people are allowed to, according to markets, right? Markets determine whether we're in bear markets, not Twitter polls. But sometimes it doesn't really matter. Just sentiment is like when people are feeling bearish, bearishness kind of begets bearishness, right? So like now that we've been talking about being bearish on this podcast for like the last 5 minutes, everyone else is probably feeling really down and bearish, right? Like these are how like market psychologies kind of work. So bear market it's a vibe. It's a feeling. Do you feel like we're in a bear market? I actually don't.
You don't feel like we're in a bear market?
We're up on the year. We're up on 365 days by a lot, by like we're 2X.
Not up since January, but up on the year. Yes.
Yes.
We're definitely, it depends on your holding horizon, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. I mean, do you remember back in the days of $80 ETH?
Yes.
Wasn't that long ago, still less than 2 years ago, that was going on.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Right? $80 in March 2020.
March 2020?
Yeah.
Do you remember?
Right.
Less than 2 years.
Also March 2019. Also March 2018. $80 look, like three times.
But so I think we've said before, under 3K ETH, we're not feeling great in general. So this is, not feeling great. The question is, how long does this last and how low do we go, right? That to me is kind of the definition of a bear. It's like sentiment on Twitter just changes on a dime. Mm-hmm. But the question is this another crypto winter or are we going to come out of this? Arthur Hayes, founder or CEO of BitMEX, actually wrote a great post. And, he's a trader, but has, I think, some insight into this sort of thing that we can glean. You could read the entire post. It's a link in the show notes. But he talks about resistance levels of 28,500 Bitcoin price for ETH and 28,500 for Bitcoin and 1,700 for ETH. And he says, I don't believe in the bottom until these levels are retested. If the levels hold, amazing. This prong has been met. If it doesn't, then I believe a mega liquidation candle will happen in the 20K to 28K range for Bitcoin and the 1300 to 1700 range for Ether. And then he goes on to say, if we breach the previous all-time highs, which were 20K for Bitcoin and 1400 for Ether respectively, he doesn't even want to think about it. So that's like a worst case scenario. Then it's like down, down, down. But he feels like we're going to test resistance at these levels, 1700 for ETH, 2800 for Bitcoin before all is said and done. What's your take on this?
Oh, I also don't want to think about it. Can we move on?
Well, what do you think? You think this happens? How long is this going to last?
There's a sentiment that I've had where, like, bear markets are when, like, you see the market coming to a decision point and it just always goes down. And we've kind of seen that happen like three times over the last like 3-4 weeks. So it's like, oh, and it goes down and it goes down. But like, we're also just following macro. Like, the difference between this bear market, this downtrend versus the last one is, like, the last one, Ether went from like $6 up to $1,400 on this fake ICO phenomenon. Meanwhile, what's happening right now is that the Federal Reserve, which is completely an exogenous to crypto, is raising interest rates and doing quantitative tightening. And so, like, it's less, not to say that crypto prices didn't get out over their ski tips. They were pretty high. $4,800 Ether, pretty high. Like $69,000 Bitcoin, nice. Also pretty high. But like, it's not like it's much more. That kind of felt much more real. Crypto feels much more real this time. And now this market pullback is simply just because the Federal Reserve is making the price of money higher. And so it's really a function of, we are tied to macro. And as soon as the S&P stops going down, crypto will stop going down. Probably. Knock on wood.
Different flavor than 2018. Yeah, I've got a take on that later. We'll say that to the end. But a few other things the carnage this week. The top 10 coins down by percentage from all-time high. I always think these numbers are interesting. Doge is down 83% from its all-time high. Nice. These are sorted in order. SHIB token, another dog token, down 77%. Cardano down 67%. Solana 65%. AVAX, that's Avalanche, 61%. ETH in the middle of the pack, 52% down from all-time high. Bitcoin 50%, Binance 49%, Matic 47%, Luna 41%. So it's quite a spread. Yet the coins you'd expect, like Ether and Bitcoin, they're kind of in the middle of the pack. You'd expect them to be least down from all-time high, and actually Matic and Luna and Binance are the least down from all-time high. So I think that's interesting to track as we get into the bear market.
Only 50% down, you know? Only 50%.
Oh, there's a silver lining, David. 50%. We've seen that before.
In previous dips, the typical average crypto dip is somewhere between 20 and 40%. And this dip is significantly higher than that. But also, like, we've seen 50% pullbacks before.
For Bitcoin, David, it's happened four times in the last 4 years.
Yeah, so
just
like
it's an annual tradition.
Like, we all know crypto's volatile. Like, this, I think there's plenty of like rationale to say that like this is just the one big pullback. Granted, like, Bankless is known for being perpetually bullish, and so maybe like I have infinite amounts of conviction for crypto, and sometimes that blinds me to short term price movements and lack of willingness to accept.
Just hold through them though. Yeah. Who cares? Like, there is actually a silver lining, and I think we were talking about this a little bit, which is like 50% pullback. You get to see who the tourists are and who the settlers are, right? And the tourists start to get scared. They start to leave.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, the settlers that know why they bought with conviction, they're the ones who stay, and it gets a lot less noisy.
Yes.
I think you've got some lessons for us too at the end. We'll share in the takes section. But let's look at our friends in the equities world. Stonks. What are we doing here, man? It's pretty volatile.
NASDAQ investor sentiment is worse now than it was in March of 2020 during the big liquidation candle back then. And historically, when everyone is like, oh, it's a bear market, it turns around. And so you can see that red line down in the bottom corner. The market sentiment is so in the gutter. And typically, like, look at how low it was the last time it was this low. It was literally the bottom of the March dip that there was a COVID crash.
The COVID.
And then it was up only from then on out.
Right.
So, you know.
It's kind of weird that all of this much ado, given, you know, because of Jerome Powell, because of Fed intervention, you know, raising rates, and just even whispering the raise of rates. This is a stat on the S&P. It had a really bouncy day. I think this was January 24th, so a few days ago. What happened that day?
Yeah, so we had this is the day where Bitcoin and Ether bottomed and then also resurged just a little bit. And this tweet says, the S&P 500 has recovered from an intraday loss of more than 4% only three times. In October of 2008 and again in October of 2008 again, I guess the housing crisis, the S&P went down negative 4.5% and negative 4.2% respectively, and then also respectively closed up 4.2%. So an intraday move of 8% and then 1.2% the next time. In January 24th, like 3 days ago, the S&P 500 went down more than 4% and then recovered positively. We had a green day, which is crazy. Yeah. Crazy volatile moves.
Markets don't know what to do at this point. Even stocks up and down don't know where they're going. We'll see how that continues in the future. But let's talk about some happier news, which is DeFi metrics still knocking it out of the park. Uniswap just crossed a milestone. They now have greater ETH and stablecoin volume than Coinbase and Binance.
Love it.
Okay, so it's happening. Decentralized exchanges are taking on the centralized exchanges. I think that's great news from a big picture perspective. Some other things going on. Phantom is becoming the third largest DeFi protocol by value locked. I consider that sort of it's its own layer one. It's sort of a side chain, very small pool of validators, but they are onboarding more people to crypto as well. And some projects surged 52% last week. To bring the total value locked to all-time highs on Phantom. Any thoughts on that, David?
No thoughts. Congrats to Phantom.
Overtaking Binance Smart Chain, no easy task. Coinbase is listing Solana ecosystem tokens as well. And I think this is part of their attempt to just list everything, just be like credibly neutral and be listing maximalists and not maximalists to any particular chain. Any thoughts on that, David?
Yeah, the hard part about this is that Solana tokens aren't ERC-20 tokens. It's its own standard, and it's easy for Coinbase to just add another ERC-20 token because they already have all the implementations. It's just like add a new contract address.
Which is similar to anything on the EVM, like Avalanche, for example, ERC-20.
Solana tokens are a different beast because of how they just are a completely different standard than the EVM. So that's why Solana tokens haven't really been able to get on the Coinbase exchange up until now, and Coinbase is now signaling that, hey, we're working on getting the Solana tokens onto Coinbase. So really important step for growth for the Solana ecosystem.
ARK Invest has taken a hit from a stock price, but they put out this fantastic report, and it was their big insights report, I believe, for 2022, what's going to happen in the future. They are, of course, we talked to Cathie Wood a few months ago, just bullish exponential growth curves, bullish technology in general. And the largest section of their report was actually on crypto. What were a few highlights from that, David, that we should talk about?
The price targets, Ryan. I think that's the whole... They have a fantastic report that covers so many different things. But of course, since we're in the market section, we want to talk about the price targets of what they predicted Bitcoin and Ether to do. So they say they one Bitcoin could exceed $1 million by 2030. That is 8 years. So according to ARK, what's Bitcoin at right now? $33,000? That $33,000 could turn into $1 million by the end of 2030. If you hold.
That's the Hopium Bankless listeners sign up for when they listen to ARK show.
ARK is also saying that Ethereum's market cap could exceed $20 trillion in the next 10 years. And so for those that want to do that math, that's $180,000 Ether, $180,000 per Ether. And that these two predictions put Bitcoin and Ether roughly at comparable market caps. Cathie Wood and ARK says that Bitcoin will have a $21 trillion market cap by 2030. And then they also say that Ethereum will have a $20 trillion market cap in the next 10 years. So just 2 years longer than that. So comparable market prices.
Are they more bullish than us, David? What happened here? Is that the real flipping?
Couldn't be.
20 trillion is a big number.
My price target for Ether is infinity, Ryan.
There you go. All right, guys, we will be back with the releases of the week, the hot news items, everything else you come to expect from a roll-up. But before we do, we want to thank the sponsors that made this episode possible.
Polygon is Ethereum's largest and most vibrant scaling solution to date. With millions of monthly users and all of the biggest DeFi apps, the Polygon ecosystem has turned into a blossoming metropolis of DeFi activity. Transactions on Polygon are quick and cheap, allowing users the freedom to achieve their DeFi goals, all while being economically anchored to Ethereum. But Polygon isn't just the proof-of-stake sidechain. The Polygon team is building a suite of scaling solutions, including Polygon Hermes, Maiden, Nightfall, and Zero, all with different design choices in order to be optimized for all possible crypto use cases. If you're a developer who wants to build on the Polygon ecosystem, go to the link in the show notes to check out their fantastic documentation. And if you're a user who just wants to experience fast and cheap DeFi, you can bridge over your ETH or other tokens and start playing around with any of the thousands of applications that are available on Polygon. The Layer 2 era is upon us. Ethereum's Layer 2 ecosystem is growing every day, and we need L2 bridges to be fast and efficient in order to live a Layer 2 life. Across is the fastest and cheapest and most secure cross-chain bridge. With Across, you don't have to worry about the long wait times or high fees to get your assets back to the Layer 1. Assets are bridged and available for use almost instantaneously. Across's bridges are powered by UMA's optimistic oracle to securely transfer tokens from Layer 2 back to Ethereum. Across is critical ecosystem infrastructure, and ownership is being handed over to the community. You can be a part of this story of Across by joining the Discord and becoming a co-founder and helping to design the fair launch of Across. If you want to bridge your assets quickly and securely, go to across.to to bridge your assets between ETH, Optimism, Arbitrum, or Boba networks. Living a bankless life requires taking control of your own private keys. Not your keys, not your crypto. That's why so many in the bankless nation already have their Ledger hardware wallet. But the Ledger ecosystem is much more than just a secure hardware wallet. Ledger is the combination of the Ledger hardware wallet, the Ledger Live app, and soon, the CL Crypto Life card powered by Ledger. The CL card powered by Ledger is a crypto debit card with powerful features like an instant exchange to fiat, where crypto assets are only sold at the moment that you swipe your card, and also credit from crypto collateral, where you can collateralize your crypto assets in order to get a higher credit limit. You'll be able to manage your CL card powered by Ledger inside the Ledger Live app, right next to all the DeFi apps and services that you're already used to using, making the Ledger Live app your one-stop shop for all of your financial needs. Go to ledger.com, grab a Ledger, and download Ledger Live to get all of your DeFi applications all in one place.
All right, guys, we are back with releases of the week. David, we have to start here with this release. In the midst of the bear market, when prices were getting slammed.
If this is the bear market, Ryan, we're not in the midst of the bear market.
I guess not.
The bits comes ahead.
The beginning of it. Twitter just released a PFP profile feature to link your NFT to your Twitter profile. Instead of the classic Twitter circle for profile, it would be displayed as a hexagon. So they released this fantastic commercial that we're looking at right here and the feature simultaneously. How big of a deal is this?
It's just lovely to see Web2 platforms adopt Web3 stuff. This isn't, in my mind, I'm a little bit underwhelmed by this, but I'm also just, it's not going to just be a negative Nancy and just say, hey, Twitter, nice job for doing NFT verification. There are some kinks that need to be worked around in the sense that, like, I can just, like, take a screenshot of a JPEG, mint that as an NFT, and then, boom, I have a hexagon with my fake NFT, and it's kind of like a workaround. But, like, you know, then you can, like, talk about verification via OpenSea APIs, stuff like that. It's a great, fantastic first step. People are loving it. People are having a fantastic time.
Not everyone, though. There's been some pushback. There's been a little bit, like, if I see a hexagon, you know, I just automatically unfollow.
Not from the crypto people, though.
Not at all.
Fuck them.
we hate NFT type community.
Sorry for swearing.
There's been that sentiment. But, like, okay, so did you do it? Have you actually tried it?
Well, no, because my profile picture is my CryptoPunk, but with some Photoshop stuff going on. So, like, I have my cool cat hanging out on the hat of my CryptoPunk. And so, like, that's not an NFT. That's two of my NFTs. So I've decided to not do that.
So I did it. And some other downsides, too. You have to have Twitter Blue, which is, like, this premium service. I've never looked into it until now. I just wanted that to try it. Wanted the hexagon because it's a new crypto feature. So I do think that Twitter can't always charge for NFTs. Like, I think this is going to be table stakes. Social media platform will have to include this for free just to be competitive. The other thing I would say is the other reason I do think this is a big deal, David, and even if it's just a very small step, is because, look, Twitter has 400 million monthly active users. Okay. And, like, we talked about mimetic desire. When I see someone with a hexagon profile photo, like,
I want that too.
I want to do that too. Right. And so I do think that there's this, again, this is another example of Web3 using Web2 to propagate itself. And that is also bullish. I'm also seeing, like we saw Meta last week, Facebook, Instagram, say they were going to add NFT features. Just this week, we'll get to it. YouTube adding NFT features in the future. So this is also going to have all the other social media platforms bandwagon onto this feature set and add NFT and crypto features. So I think that is good too. But we'll okay, see so how that goes.
This was a fun little Twitter spaces where this was the something about the Lemons NFT project. I can't remember the full name of the Lemons. But there was a Twitter spaces and two people showed up with the same NFT as their profile picture.
Wait, where is it?
On the right side, yeah. The lemon with a little sprout coming out the head. And
what is a circle?
One's a circle and one's a hexagon. So you know who's got the real one. So there's an imposter, man, among us.
that's great. That's very cool. And it is great that it validates directly on chain.
Little Lemons NFT. Mm-hmm.
Look, Reddit as well.
Here's the table stakes you were talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, the table stakes I was talking about. So Reddit is apparently working on NFT profile picks as well. Like, everyone's going to do it. Very cool to see that happening. David, this was another cool feature rollout from the makers of Etherscan.
Yeah, I saw you having fun with this.
I was having a great time with this. This is called BlockScan Chat. And what's cool about this is you can basically just send a message from your ETH address to some other ETH address. Mm-hmm. So you're like davidhoffman.eth, right, David?
Yep.
So I sent you a message. Did you ever respond to
me? That goes to my Argent wallet. I need to get my ENS email on my Argent wallet. Sorry.
That's why. Yeah. Okay. So I just had fun because, like, it's just you log in with an ETH address if you have MetaMask or something. And I have one that's called bank.eth is my ENS address. And I just started like DMing some people I know. So I just like DMed DC. I DMed Anthony Sisano. I DMed you somewhere in here. I think this is DC, a little back and forth. DC, I didn't know it was him at first. Like, I had to actually label his .eth. And this is what he replies. He's like, "Hey, I'm launching a new one ETH giveaway. Please send me your seed phrase to enter." So I'm like, "Oh my god!"
Did you send him your seed phrase?
No, I was like, "Okay, it's my first spam. It's my first spam message, and I'm gonna block this account." So I blocked him, and then like I tweeted out that I blocked it, and he was like, "Hey, why'd you block me?" So anyway, it was just fun going back and forth with people. Actually, Vitalik, I sent one to Vitalik.eth. Is ETH honey? I asked him. And he replied, I think it's funny, personally.
That's pretty funny. That's pretty funny.
Classic Vitalik.
Wait, go back to DC's chat with him. Because you say, what'd you say?
Did we talk? I hope we didn't talk bad about you, David. I don't know.
Oh, I'm about to make fun of DC. you say, "We're living in the future, DC." And DC goes, "Haha, strong 1992 feels. I was born in 1992.
There you go. DC investor. Oh, man. That's great. Yeah, you know, DC always talks about, like, when you did that layer zero with him, he was talking about, like, the birth of the internet being very much like the birth of crypto. And I was just thinking, like, does David actually understand this, DC? How much of this is he picking up?
I had an AIM account.
There you go. You had an AIM account. This is AIM. This is Ethereum Instant Messenger.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So super cool experiment that just rolled out. You guys can try it. This is another one, David. What's this? SOS?
SOSmarket.io, a new prediction market on the scene. So in addition to Polymarket, we now have SOS Market, which has prediction markets for stuff. So check them out if you want to go bet on stuff.
A lot of ways to bet on stuff in crypto, that's for sure. I'm bullish on this. So Opera just launched a dedicated crypto browser. Okay, Opera is a browser. Has like 1-3% of market share, so it's not widely used. But they are going all in on crypto features. So imagine if MetaMask was also a web browser. How much more usable, how much more, you know, extensible would it be rather than an extension?
Right.
And that's what Opera is doing here. Brave is doing some stuff. And I think, you know, Chrome and Firefox, they're going to be late if they don't join on the bandwagon as well. So it's good to see Opera innovating here. Right now, this is in beta. I've used it. It's okay. It's kind of clunky. I can do some of my DeFi stuff, but not all of it. But I'm sure it'll get better in the future. Anything to add on that, David?
More wallets is always better. Google should just buy MetaMask.
Google should buy MetaMask?
Yeah.
I don't want that, David. Yeah. Mm-mm. They'll kill it. I don't want them to buy MetaMask.
Well, they got to do something, and they have infinite money. So...
That's true. Now Consensus does too. We'll be getting to that shortly. But let's talk about this. Robinhood is doing something. What are they adding?
Robinhood deploys beta crypto wallets, allowing select customers to transfer off platform, which is a very needed feature so that you can you can actually withdraw the crypto assets that you buy through Robinhood rather than just buying exposure. You can actually buy crypto assets.
Imagine that.
This is them trying to catch up to like the rest of the crypto ecosystem, but a really important feature to unlock, because they're printing money with Dogecoin. They just printed a bunch of money, and so they know that there's money there. So they need to just lean into more crypto stuff, and so that's what they're doing here.
Yeah, that's great. I don't know, 30 million users, 40 million users, like a lot of retail users using Robinhood. So another good onboarding. Also, Zora V3. This is an NFT marketplace. I feel like it's a bit more crypto native, David, and V3 is rolling out. So what is coming on Zora V3?
Yeah, Zora V3, I think, is the most like bankless aligned marketplace, NFT marketplace that it exists. It's very much aligned with the protocol sync thesis. And if the phrase protocol sync thesis doesn't land with you, please go listen to the podcast or read the article on Bankless about it. It's a fundamental Bankless thesis. The protocol sync thesis is in a nutshell is it's a very deep protocol. There are very zero trust assumptions, very little trust assumptions. Things can be built on top of Zora. NFT marketplaces can be built on top of Zora V3. It's like a meta protocol. And so not only is Zora a marketplace in of itself, but there's the Zora marketplace, and then there's the Zora protocol, and the Zora marketplace is built by the Zora team, and so is the Zora protocol. So they built their own marketplace on top of their own protocol, but many, many, many marketplaces can be built on top of the Zora protocol. So it's kind of like 0x and Matcha, right? Like Matcha is an application built by the 0x team that uses the 0x protocol. But anybody can use the 0x protocol. And so this is the same kind of idea with going on with Zora, just trying to scale out trustless NFT marketplaces. So they've released their Zora V3 article. There'll be a link in the show notes if you want to learn more. And at some point, we're going to be doing some content with Jacob from Zora about this, because he's a deep thinker, and this is a very like bankless ethos marketplace that we definitely need more of that in the world of NFTs.
Almost everything on chain with this style of NFT minting. Actually, William Pister from Metaversal wrote a fantastic intro to Zora V3 too, so you can go check that out at metaversal.banklesshq.com if you want more on that too. Let's talk about this. Dala HQ, they're just launching full support for forming DAO LLCs in the US from anywhere in the world. I just thought this was pretty cool, David, because Wyoming passed that legislation about being able to like link DAOs to Wyoming LLC type entities and get bank accounts. And now here is a third party, Dala, who is making that easy. So you can just kind of click and generate, you have a DAO and you can generate an LLC entity for that DAO and register it in Wyoming, get a tax ID, get bank accounts. This is another form of interoperability, another form of bridging. This is a bridge from the new world of crypto to the legacy legal world of nation states, and it's cool to see that get developed.
100%.
Let's talk about this
pack.xyz.
What are we looking at? Time.
Yeah, so we discovered this after doing our Curve episode last night. That was last live streamed Wednesday night. Fantastic episode, by the way. And pack.xyz is a way to vote on the quality of certain Congress members, certain representatives, or potential representatives on how crypto aligned they are. So this is your Are You a Friend of Crypto scorecard, and it's public, and everyone gets to vote as to whether they think somebody is crypto aligned or a crypto hater. And it's just basically calling out all the crypto haters out there that are
giving them a score.
Giving them a score from -5 to +5. And so there's a number of crypto haters out there. There's also Mitch McConnell comes up top. Elizabeth Warren is a big crypto hater.
Look, this changed from yesterday, David. So yesterday, Elizabeth Warren was on the top.
Somebody came in and really dumped some -5 votes on a lot of people.
Tom Cotton, John Kennedy, Susan Collins all got -5s.
Right.
And the community votes on these things, right?
Community votes. Yeah, this is community generated. This is kind of like a community generated list. But we also have some winners on there. So we have Erica Rose up top. We have Tom Emmer coming on the podcast in a couple weeks. Pat Toomey, Ted Budd, Cynthia Lummis. So if you are trying to figure out where your congressman stands, or if you have an opinion about where your congressperson stands about crypto, you can check it out at pack.xyz. Nice app, nice website.
Also, that Curve episode was awesome. Go listen to that.
Curve episode was awesome.
Too.
I learned so much. It felt like the finance MMORPG like things that I've predicted would come to crypto like years ago. Curve wars are dope.
Totally. This is a Curve Wars episode of Bankless. Go check that out too. Let's get into the raises, David.
Raises.
This is
big, a story big of raises, raises. Big raises.
All right, here's the theme, right? Just like a few months ago, many of these companies were like already massively valued, mm-hmm. and now they're just raising at an even higher valuation. Mm-hmm. I'll start with Consensus. So they just raised more, it looks like.
They are raising. They have not
They are
raising.
Raising. They're raising at a $7 billion valuation. And just not less than 2 months ago, they raised at a $3.5 billion valuation.
Amazing.
These
Amazing.
Private markets are just cranking. What's the next one, David?
Yeah, we got Fireblocks clocking in at $8 billion after raising $550 million. They just raised.
During the summer. Do you remember this?
I think the last time we talked about a Fireblocks raise, we were also saying how they had just raised.
Yes. Jeez.
So, damn, if you think
$2.2 billion, I think, over the summertime when we talked to Fireblocks CEO.
Amazing, amazing. And doesn't end there. We also have Block Daemon, which is a public blockchain's infrastructure service, like staking as a service, node stuff. Raised $207 million at $3.25 billion valuation. Crazy.
It's like the Oprah Winfrey meme. Like, you get to be a unicorn. You get mm-hmm. to be a unicorn. Just handing out these billion-dollar valuations everywhere.
Yeah, meanwhile, while our crypto assets are taking a tumble, the valuations of some of these companies are just through the roof. And coming in last but not least, FTX US scores an $8 billion valuation after raising $400 million.
This is just FTX's U.S. subsidy, okay? FTX writ large right. is like already in the 20s of billions, right. maybe mm-hmm. 30s of billions by now.
But I have a take about this, Ryan.
What's your take, David?
My take is some gargantuan raises happened last week, and every single one of these investments is going to underperform ETH and BTC over time. Every
Ooh,
single one. So
bold
if,
take.
If you, as the listener, are frustrated that you were not able to get into some of these rounds, just buy Bitcoin and Ether because they're going to be the winners.
Do you really do you think that that's just like... That can't be true in 10 years when the price of Ether is $20 trillion, as Kathy Wood and mm-hmm. team predict, right? So, like, it's got to be the case that some of the value capture happens higher in the stack as the market matures, don't you think? And are you just saying that, like, ETH and Bitcoin still have a ways to go before that point? Or do you always think that ETH and Bitcoin will outperform kind of app layer style investments?
I think if we are investing hundreds of millions of dollars into $1 billion valuations, then at that point, like, a lot of that upside has already happened. And so these are people trying to take like risk off investments, which is weird because it's risk off investments onto an industry that is living on top of these risk on assets. So just take the risk. Like, it's hidden risk because, like, they're trying, like, oh, we're going to go the safe route and invest in equities rather than crypto assets. But the equities are based on the crypto assets. Just buy the crypto assets.
Yeah, this has definitely been true historically. David, let's talk about another true thing historically. Mm-hmm. That's getting a job in crypto is awesome.
It's also bullish for you.
Yeah, bullish for your life. Bullish for your career. Go to the Bankless job boards and see what jobs we have. Maybe 2022 is the year you get a job in crypto. A few I will read out. Senior Go Rust engineer at Syndica, a smart contract tech lead at StarX, a senior full stack engineer at Syndica, a lead data analyst at MakerDAO, a data engineer at Paperchain, a senior technical writer for Go Ethereum, the Ethereum Foundation. There's more too. Go check the Bankless job boards, bankless.palette.xyz. To sign up, check those out, get them in your inbox as well. You know, this is an interesting tweet from the Blockworks folks. And it's a whole thread on all of these weird job titles and the corporations that are starting to hire for them. Nike is hiring a metaverse director, apparently.
Who is?
Nike. Sorry, I said Nike.
A metaverse director for Nike, and that's not the only one. They have a whole metaverse category. So principal innovation engineer, metaverse category, senior 3D game designer, metaverse engineer at Nike, like crazy, crazy.
Metaverse engineer at Nike. That is a...
Well, I bet they have like, you need 3 years experience working in the metaverse or something like that.
Probably. But seriously, Nike, come post on the Bakeless job board too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll get you a job. We'll get you a true crypto native, a true person who's actually been working in the metaverse.
I mean, there are a few people, maybe 3 years. Have you been 3 years in the metaverse, sir?
Oh, my whole life. Ever since I got into Diablo. In the metaverse. Diablo 2 was in the metaverse. Yeah,
yeah, that's when you started. All right. Back in the early 90s when you started the joined the internet with DC, right? Mm-hmm. All right. News time, David.
Oh, boy.
Are
we
ready
to
get into this?
Here we
go. It's a lot.
This is going to be a mess. Let's do it.
What do we even talk about? What do we even call this?
How do we even start?
This is like would you call this a DeFi scandal?
Yes, I think
DeFi
I would.
Hubbub.
But it's scandals layered on top of scandals. So we're invoking an older scandal because it's coming relevant again to talk about this DeFi scandal.
Okay, let's set the stage a little bit. We have to talk about Danny Sestagalli, mm-hmm. Danny Sesta on Twitter, mm-hmm. who is a DeFi builder, very talented DeFi builder as well. Some people have compared him to like Andre Cronier. Mm-hmm. He's like the Andre Cronier of 2022. Right. Andre, of course, built YFI, tons of fantastic protocols in 2020. And I guess that's some background on him.
He's got the guy behind the Magic Internet Money, Wonderland, Time, Spell, like all
Abracadabra,
all of this, Abracadabra,
yep.
all this DeFi mafia.
He's got quite a following too.
Big following.
So like,
big
how would you describe like the tone and tenor of how Danny operates on Twitter and kind of messaging that sort of thing?
Very, very populist. His following is very aggressive, of which I personally discovered. Accidentally.
You've been on the brunt end of that.
I've been
right?
on the brunt end of this.
As
yes,
have
indeed.
I.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
It's a very like working for the people, yes. anti suits, right. I work for you kind
big,
of.
Big frog
mentality.
Army leader. I think in his like Twitter bio, he's like CFO, COO, something
of the frog army.
Something C frog of the frog nation. Army. Yeah. Of the frog nation. And so like very much like a 4chan populist type.
And the projects are interesting too, because he has a tendency to like, ship fast,
yes.
very fast,
very
fast. Forking things, taking whatever.
Gotta appease the frogs, right?
Appease the frogs. Abracadabra, and he's made a lot of people a lot of money,
yes,
I would say,
yes.
is some of the context. Like right. token price has gone up. Abracadabra.money is a maker fork, actually, that takes some of the guardrails off of Maker, I would say, makes it a little bit more risky,
yes.
a little bit more, some people would say, interesting.
Conservatism out of MakerDAO, yeah.
Yes, and Wonderland is a more recent project. The time token is part of that. It's kind of an Olympus fork, and that's on Avalanche. Okay, so that's Danny. That's who he is. We got a first revelation this week, and this is, Twitter confirmed, so it's somewhat unconfirmed, but,
right.
It seems like it could be the case. Right. What was this first revelation, David?
Yeah, so in the bear market, a lot of the quote-unquote bear market, especially in the last week, a lot of his projects are based on collateral and collateralization. And when the value of collateral goes down, bad things happen. And so there's been a thread from Jack Nielwald that, like, I don't follow his projects too closely, and that's why I got the brunt of the frog army. But, like, we'll go ahead and read this thread. Time is the largest OHM fork by market cap, Olympus DAO fork by market cap. Ryan, if you scroll down. And has been used as a playground by Danielle, I think is how Danny... VC's ambitions and more creative ideas. It's offered five-figure APYs to stakers, but now, as a result of the price crash, it's trading at its below its treasury value. Abracadabra Money, which is the spell token, is a lending platform that lets users take out positions against crypto collateral and yield-generating positions. This allows users to take out loans that pay themselves off. These loans charge interest and get liquidated, and fees go to the spell holders. Danny and other team members have also taken out loans against their wrapped memo, one of the tokens, using spell, meaning they can cash out without actually selling. So using their tokens as collateral to borrow against, so they don't actually sell their tokens, but they can get the value out of them. But if those positions get liquidated, they have all the money, and it's basically forced selling. Like, they didn't press the sell button, but somebody did. And so people talked about how this strategy would be perhaps exposed or liquidated if the value of these collaterals went down too much. So they borrow all the money that they can against it, and if it goes down, then everything gets liquidated, and like that, you have a cascading liquidation. So this strategy was talked about on Twitter, causing Time to crash below the value of the assets in the treasury, possibly triggering a liquidation event. Buybacks were supposed supposed to be in place to keep the token price at the treasury value no matter what. But this didn't happen, and the devs were silent, leading to accusations of a soft rug. Danny locked his Twitter account during all this drama, but fired back with an admission that time buybacks were not working as expected, and a plan to fix time in Bosler's spell came out simultaneously. And so that was kind of like the start of this whole thing. And
what is this idea of a soft rug? That's an interesting term. What do you think that means?
Yeah, that's just talking about how like he's not like capitulating his own assets. He's just putting his assets into a collateralized position, borrowing as much money as possible on that. And then if the value of those things go down and then there is a liquidation event, like it doesn't matter because he borrowed all the money anyways. So it's like a roundabout way to exit without actually pressing the sell button.
I got it. And that's the charge, again, somewhat unconfirmed. And that was just the first part of it. If that alone happened, we probably wouldn't be talking about it right now. But right. Something was added to that, which is the second revelation. And this is going to take
this is unrelated,
bit
actually. So same person, same projects, but a completely different bit of drama going on.
OK, so what is this bit of drama? Because it is unrelated, but it's kind of related to the entire scandal story.
Actually, before we get into that, it is TBD about whether Danny and some of the other big leaders of the projects were doing the soft rug. That is an accusation. They also could be using that same money to bolster the time price. That is what I think Danny has stated he was intending to do with that in order to prevent a cascading liquidation. So this is still kind of unraveling. And we're still kind of figuring this out. But in the meantime, there is a bunch of other drama that came about. So are we ready to go into this?
Yeah, let's go into this. And there's some backstory here. So I guess maybe the high level is that a former Quadriga co-founder just emerged. And apparently he's been the right-hand person of Danny, managing a lot of the money behind the time treasuries. And
on the
this individual,
on the multisig.
Yes, on the multisig, this individual, Michael Patron, has an incredibly shady past. Mm-hmm. How should we best explain this? Like, who is Michael Patron? What is this shady past? What is Quadriga? Do you want to tell some of the story here, David?
Yeah, well Michael Patron has been off the radar, off the grid for a very long time. But this individual, Zach XBTC, tweeted out private DMs in Telegram with Danny. And he says to Danny, I came across something rather odd about OX Sifu, which is one of the multi-sig signers on the projects. He goes, I've discovered something about Sifu. And Danny goes, what's up? And Zach XBT says, well, he's the Quadriga guy. The Quadriga guy that was a convicted felon for identity fraud and has been off the grid for a while. And Danny goes, I cannot confirm, but I have thought a lot about that. And he responds, dangerous to be working with him, sir. And that's one tweet. And that's basically that. And so he tweets out, this needs to be shared. 0x Sifu is the co-founder of Quadriga CX, Michael Patron. If you are unfamiliar with that, it's the Canadian exchange that collapsed in 2019 after founder Gerald Cotton disappeared with $169 million. I've confirmed with this with Danny over messages. And so this is a really big deal because this is an individual with a very shady past and is discovered to be a multisig signer on this DeFi protocol on Avalanche that has a ton of TVL. And so
managing millions of dollars,
of people's
millions
money,
millions of dollars of a protocol.
And like what's egregious about this is that Danny knew about this for about a month without raising the alarm about the significance of this individual. So there's this fantastic summarizing article that we're going to read some of the things about it just because it summarizes so well. After all of this came out, after 0xBT revealed this, Danny, if you want to scroll down a little bit, Ryan, Danny posted on Twitter, today, allegations about our team member 0xSifu will circulate. I want everyone to know that I'm aware of this and have decided that the past of an individual does not determine their future. I choose to value the time we spend together without knowing his past more than anything. Danny also issued an official statement reiterating his beliefs in a second chances and reassuring everyone that all the funds are safe, even though a convicted felon is watching over the treasury. I found out about this 1 month ago, and I am of the opinion of giving second chances, as I've mentioned on Twitter. I've seen the community very divided about my choice of maintaining him as the treasury manager after finding out who he was and his past. He added that patron will step down from his position at Wonderland, and there will be a vote as to whether or not he rejoins the team. That vote is ongoing at the time of recording. Wonderland has the say to who manages the treasury, not me or the rest of the Wonderland team, says Danny. Yes. Also, this is funny backstory on this Michael guy. Michael Patron is former convicted felon Omar Danani, who legally changed his name to cover up his criminal past. Patron left Quadringa in early 2016 after he and Cotton allegedly had a quarrel and split ways. Prior to founding Quadringa, Patron was one of 28 people arrested in connection to operating an identity theft ring called Shadow Crew. He pled guilty and was sentenced to 18 months in U.S. federal prison. Upon his release, he was sent back to Canada, where he went right back to doing the thing he was always doing all along, which was moving money. And so that's kind of the story. The take at the very bottom of this article has a take of on this individual. He says, Patron is a one-trick pony. He's not clever enough to reinvent himself, and his hubris makes it impossible for him to simply disappear and go quiet and enjoy a life somewhere. Kind of pointing out he's like a serial shenaniganizer.
Okay, all right. That's so just, I wonder if, just to follow this, large DeFi protocol managing lots of money with a very esteemed builder, DeFi builder in the community, Danny. Mm-hmm. The community finds out that the person that Danny set in charge of the multi-sigs and this community treasury is a convicted felon, super shady individual.
Nefarious individual, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Nefarious individual. Probably many in the community would say should not be trusted with money. And furthermore, that Danny knew about this for a month. Mm-hmm. Didn't disclose this to the community. And so, and then it was interesting because Danny decided to double down and say, hey, you know, second chances. I believe in giving people second chances before then going back to the community and say, what do you want to do with this individual? Should he still be managing the funds or not? And so this created quite a stir on Twitter, I would say. Back and forth.
Quite the stir.
People were disappointed with Danny about the kind of the lack of transparency, disappointed with the project and some of the statements. Michael Patron made a statement as well. Do we want to get into that or skip that, David?
Yeah, it's more or less like, hey, I've had a fantastic time working on Wonderland. I'm sad that I'm going to have to go. I understand why I have to go, but I'm leaving and I love all of you. And then a bunch of emojis from the community in Discord. You can we'll put the tweet in the show notes.
Yeah, so here I guess some takes that I have early on. First of all, we reached out to Danny, actually, and he's going to come on the podcast, I think, hopefully next week, and talk about this. So give him a chance to kind of explain
actions. I've given him my Calendly link before, and he hasn't clicked on it. Hopefully he comes on the pod.
Fingers crossed. Yes. That's what he publicly committed to.
So Danny, we are very fair, and we are very fair and rational individuals, so... We can do this.
Yes.
We can do this.
At least David is. I'm not so much. But takeaways for me, mm-hmm. like this is a very bad look for DeFi. This is the fodder that Elizabeth Warren wants to bring to a Senate committee. Like if she found out about this, right? So like you've got a convicted felon managing millions of dollars of investors' capital without them knowing about it. What's her answer to that? Regulation, more mm-hmm. regulation in the space. Mm. So, one take for me is like,
sorry to cut you off. This is a shadowy super coder. Yeah. That's who this is.
I told you so. Yeah. And we'd have to say, okay, Elizabeth, in this specific case, you were right.
Uh-huh.
And here's the take, I guess. If we don't regulate ourselves, mm-hmm. they'll regulate us.
Yeah.
Okay. And I think this is why, the original poster for this was at Zach XBT is doing mm-hmm. God's work in surfacing this,
taking
and
a big
a
risk
on this,
because
taking
like
a risk.
Yeah, because this the frog army is not something that you want to mess with, and this is like
I'm
going
sure he's gotten
for
threats,
the
David.
Oh,
I'm sure he's gotten threats.
I'm sure he's getting
people
them
in
right
his
now.
DMs. I'm sure it's like even legal threats, all sorts of mm-hmm. things. But an individual whistleblower shedding a light on this is more of what DeFi needs in order to keep itself green. Yes, Zach, XBT.
Nice job.
Well done.
Nice job.
Thanks for having the courage to surface this. And I guess my last takeaway on this is just in general, we have to be very careful of trusting people in DeFi. Okay. Like trusting people in crypto in general, or especially it's a red flag for me whenever someone asks you to trust them. Okay. Like the takeaway here is never trust anyone in crypto that demands that you trust them. And people who are continuously saying, no, it's fine. Like I've got the multi-sigs, just like trust me.
Right.
I have your best interest at heart. That always sends red flags and shivers up my back, because the whole philosophy is crypto is verify, don't trust.
Right.
You shouldn't have to trust people. We have systems in place to make this entire space trustless. And we don't want to depend on trusting a small set of individuals. It's not reputational trust in this space. It shouldn't be.
Those
are some of my takeaways. What do you have?
Anon developers are always a hairy topic because, like,
it's good overall, but
I'm happy that people are able to be Anon in this industry if they so choose, but also the combination of Anons on multi-sigs is a little bit rough because reputation is a fantastic piece of collateral to have, to hold someone accountable. And if you are an Anon, like, you remove that option from the community to hold you accountable because of how you're Anon.
This guy, Michael, literally changed his name.
Yes.
Right. Literally changed his name. How much
easier to cover up a past, right?
Yeah, to cover up a past. How much easier is that to do on the internet, where you could just, you know, change an ETH address, create a new, you know, online reputation and start from scratch. So it's something that we have to work on. Here are some takes from around the community. This is Andre Cronier,
who works very, very closely with Danny.
Yeah, why don't you read this?
This is just the it's so tiresome meme. It's also tiresome. And Andre says, I just want to code. And he has some commentary further down as well, where he says, I still support Danny, still planning on working with him, but there are lines. A history of consistent fraud, theft, and malicious behavior isn't a mistake. That's intent. Having Sifu manage funds, especially user funds, can be argued as negligence. That's all I have. Danny knew for a month, and in that time, Sifu was handling funds. I don't know what psyops. I don't know what's going on. I want to get off Willy Wonka's magical ride.
There you go. From Andre, a similar kind of builder in the field. What's his take, David?
Yeah, so Danny, Danny wrote somewhere that he said, like, I thought I could fix him. Like, oh, I thought I could fix this convicted felon person, which is a brunt of some jokes on crypto Twitter. And then Simona Pop, who's a fantastic female community leader in the space, goes, the female urge to know that never works.
Yeah, I can't fix him. And I think the important thing here was transparency and disclosure, right? So, like, if the community had have known who this individual was managing their funds, then they could have gotten ahead of this and voted on it. And they're in the process of voting now, and I expect they will not reinstate this individual as the manager of their millions of dollars in treasury.
We would show the snapshot, but it's got the feature of the votes are being hidden, so we don't actually know, like, who's winning or who's losing.
It'll probably be available by the time you guys listen to this. Anyway, moving on.
It ends January 28th at 9 p.m. Pacific time, I think. Yeah.
There you go. Well, that's what's happening in DeFi, the kind of the latest thing.
That was a good one.
A lot of drama.
That was a good one.
It took us a while to get through. I hope you're hanging with us. Yeah. Let's talk about some Ethereum stuff. Big moves this week. So Ryan Wyatt, he is a executive at YouTube over their gaming division. Leaving YouTube.
Yeah, he was.
He's leaving.
He's
joining Polygon Studios.
Nice.
Okay? He's joining a layer two development studio as their CEO. And we've messaged him privately, and he's basically said, yep, burning the ships, all in Web3, here I come.
Nice.
Super cool to see that exodus. I think that's going to be big things.
What?
He's coming on the podcast too, right?
Damn it, that's what I was going to say.
Oh, sorry.
Do you know what he's also joining, Ryan?
Front run.
The Bankless podcast.
Yes, we're excited about that too. We're going to talk all about it. YouTube also wants to help content creators capitalize on NFTs. That's the headline.
But apparently, YouTube execs aren't satisfied by the rate of Web2 movement. So just saying that you're going to do NFT stuff, not enough to keep the talent on the ship.
Yeah, that's right. But this is a cool message from the CEO of YouTube, who is stating that they are going to focus on expanding the YouTube ecosystem to help creators capitalize on emerging technologies, including things like NFTs, while continuing to strengthen and enhance the experience creators and fans have on YouTube. YouTube adding NFTs. We'll see that this year at some point in time. Mm. That's big. David, something happening in the Solana ecosystem as well. We don't have time to get into all of it, but what is the TLDR summary here?
Yeah, so during all the liquidations, during the big OOF candles that happened last Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, Solana did the whole go down thing again, significantly degraded performance that basically prevented the average individual from pushing a transaction through the Solana chain.
They couldn't even pay enough. Like with Ethereum, gas prices rise, but in this case, they couldn't even pay enough to get their transactions. Just like wouldn't work.
Yeah, the network just wasn't accepting transactions except in like very specific scenarios. And the Solana network consensus is different from what I'm used to. Anatoly, the CEO of Solana, goes, a quick summary of the recent performance issues in the network. Liquidator bots started spamming the network with 2 million packets per second, hitting a single node with mostly duplicate messages. These messages unearthed a bug in how the network was handling duplicates. The code responsible for deduping messages was after the signature verification, blah, 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 blah. Since then, the network has seen much better performance, but there's still some starvation happening with the liquidator spam. Underload blocks are smaller with fewer than expected transactions. And here's the part that it's a really big red flag for me. To address the general issue, engineers plan to introduce flow control in version 1.9 with QoS by stake weight. Stake weight is like the stake of the Solana token. But now
QoS stands for quality of service.
Thank you. But now implementing this feature in 1.8 is the highest priority. This implementation uses QUIC. Do you know what that one is?
Quick, no.
Okay. To rate limit senders. This should be rolled out in the next 4 to 5 weeks. Okay. Introduce flow control by stake weight. In plain English, which Anatoly seems to be allergic to, he is saying that transaction input, transaction inclusion in the blockchain will be controlled by your level of Solana stake. And so if you have significant stake, you get to add your transactions in more consistently. And this is the thing that has always bugged me about Solana, because if you cannot validate the chain, then you are at the whims of the people who can. In this case,
they are giving validators with stake as a proportion of capital. Mm-hmm. They are elevating them. The validators with more capital have the ability to censor transactions, right, have the ability to capture MEV and get their transactions in ahead of the plebs.
So the significant stakers of the Solana ecosystem, the massive exchanges of the world that run the validators, are able to get their transactions in first before the users. So if you have a race condition to save your position from being liquidated, you will be losing to somebody with a significant amount of stake, which is almost always a very well-capitalized individual. So your transaction as an individual to save your position is going to lose to somebody with a lot of capital who's going to liquidate you.
Welcome to Robin Hood.
Welcome to Robin Hood. Why did we get upset by GME in the first place? Like this is the traditional finance system where the bankers win. Like this is why the specific network design of Solana does not sit well with me.
Yeah, I just don't think it's situated to be a layer one settlement, layer with this kind of design. I think that some in Solana might see this as a feature. Oh, okay, we're improving, we're making sure the network doesn't go down by implementing this quality of service by stake weight feature. But it is not a feature. It's a bug.
It's centralization.
It's a bug in the system.
It's like, hey, we found another way to introduce centralization.
There you go. Enough of that.
We'll see how that progresses. I don't like being negative, but.
It's
concerning. It's extremely concerning. Okay. One more thing about this, Ryan. What happened in 2008 when the markets turned into a gigantic mess? When markets and financial markets, we had our episode with Tarun Chitra, who talked about every single financial innovation is about the process of removing lawyers. What happened during the bottom of 2008 was that markets broke, and because of the collateralized debt obligations and all the mess of who owns what, everything broke, and so they had to reintroduce lawyers back into the system to determine who owns what. If the Solana blockchain goes down and halts, and the clarity on who gets liquidated and how is broken, and people's legal rights feel violated, it goes from a world where we have consensus determined by a blockchain to back to lawyers. And the goal is to never go back to lawyers. And so we need networks that have 100% uptime, because the difference between 100% uptime and 99% uptime is that all of the important stuff happens in that 1%. And that 1% is when the lawyers get called in. And that's where regulations happen. And that's where Elizabeth Warren gets upset. And then we do not want to piss off Elizabeth Warren.
No, especially not. I don't want her to find out about the Danny thing, to be honest. So I hope she's not listening to this podcast, Elizabeth. And I hope people aren't hearing from that like, oh, David hates Solana, Bankless hates Solana, Ryan hates Solana. It's like, no, we don't. I mean, I think Solana is a fine execution layer. I think it is fine in doing what it's doing and onboarding lots of people. What we are saying, though, is with things like this reveal that it is not suitable to be a layer one settlement layer for the world. It's not suitable to be compared to what Ethereum is doing. Anyway, enough said on that. Let's keep moving. Layer 2 2022. It is the year of Layer 2. Let's go through a few things. So Synthetics just launched incentives, token incentives.
L2
on Optimism. This is great. Tokens on top of tokens. This is going to juice up the L2 ecosystem. I hope more projects do this. Any other thoughts, David?
Yeah, 50,000 SNX will be distributed over a one-month period to people that LP Ether and SNX on Gelato Network on top of Optimism. So cool. Congrats to Optimism. Congrats to Synthetics. Let's get these yield farms out the door, guys.
Yeah, this is another cool thing that's going on, a battle for fees. In the battle for fees between all of the roll-ups, users win because fees just go down. Arbitrum just published an update that lowers transaction fees.
Once again.
And their big transaction fee lower hasn't even been implemented yet. That is called Nitro. And look at them all competing. So Arbitrum is screenshotting that. And they're like, haha, we're lower than Optimism now. Just last week they weren't.
They keep trading blow for blow. It's like, exactly. Oh, Optimism is like, well, we push an update and now our fees are lower. Now Arbitrum is like, well, we push an update and now our fees are lower.
And I love it, right? And so this is Optimism talking about, you know, transactions going up, savings going up as well. Get you a chain that can do both. This is the kind of competition we need in the space, right?
Because can you click on the graph? Click on the graph.
Yeah.
So on the red line is the number of transactions per day, which as soon as Optimism did their update last week, which reduced fees by 30%, it just hockey sticks. And then also what also hockey sticks is the black line, which is the multiple times cheaper versus the Ethereum L1. And so we went from 50-ish, 60 times cheaper to over 200 times cheaper with that last update. And there are more updates to come.
When you make the blocks cheaper, there's more demand. That's what this graph is saying as well.
Crazy.
It's great. Fuse has also just deployed on Arbitrum as well. That is from Rari, of course. Mm-hmm. This is a pretty big deal, too. ZK DAO.
Huge.
This was just approved. ZK DAO is a DAO specifically dedicated to the ZK Sync ecosystem. That is, of course, ZK rollups from the folks at Matter Labs. They now have $200 million. To play with. They're going to deploy that to users, to actually not users, developers, ecosystem participants in the ZK rollup network. And there's all sorts of ways you can reach out and get involved. So these layer twos are well capitalized as well. And it looks like they're going to use the funds to grow their ecosystems.
$200 million for the development. I'm bullish.
That's great. NFTs. You bullish NFTs still, David?
Yeah. Can we just burn through these
brands and NFTs? Everyone's coming aboard NFTs. Okay. Mm-hmm. Do you want to start Prada? Yeah.
Prada and Adidas, which has recently ventured into the metaverse. Even once again, no one knows what that means, are partnering to launch a collection of NFTs later this month. Also on Polygon. Gucci. Gucci taps into toy brand Superplastic to drop 10 Super Gucci NFTs in February. I do not know some of these brands. Superplastic.
Bud Light,
the worst beer ever. But beer giant Anheuser-Busch launches NFT project for Bud Light. Cool.
We don't know if it's the worst beer ever. Have you had all the beers?
I've had
bad Bud Lights.
They're all in the same category, the light beer shenanigans.
Hey, this link won't load, but Paris Hilton, apparently she's giving away Paris Hilton NFTs. She's a brand in of itself. He's giving those away on Jimmy Fallon.
Yeah.
Again, look, we're propagating everywhere.
Ape. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Elite shows are becoming like NFT propagation engines. What's this? This is something different on the NFT side. So OpenSea is doing a thing. What are they doing?
Yeah, so OpenSea support has tweeted out on Twitter, to address feedback we've received about our creator tools, we've updated our collection storefront contract limits to only support a creation up to 5 collections and 50 items per collection. So basically what that means is that if you're using OpenSea to mint your NFTs, your NFT, you only have 5 different collections at 50 apiece. So you have maximum like 250 NFTs before you have to like make a new account or something. Putting in like throttles on creators minting NFTs, and I actually don't know why that's going on. Some negative pushback from the creator community on this one.
Huh, that's interesting. Wow. Yeah. Okay, Bitcoin news. El Salvador, they just purchased more Bitcoin. Buying the dip here.
410 more Bitcoins. The nation now owns 1,500 Bitcoins and also plans to issue a $1 billion 10-year bond this year. So we have Michael Saylor.
A 10-year Bitcoin bond, right?
Bitcoin bond, yeah. So we have Michael Saylor and Strategy, and now we have Naib Taleb, or however, I can't remember his name. And El Salvador.
Bukele.
Bukele.
Not Taleb. Yeah. Taleb is a...
Taleb's the other one. Yeah, yes. He hates Bitcoin.
He does. Great writer, though. IMF is saber-rattling and urging El Salvador to remove Bitcoin as legal tender, kind of threatening them, basically being like, hey, you're going to be cut off from the IMF, from the global finance community, bye-bye credit debt facilities if you continue doing this. IMF not happy, waving their finger at Bukele and El Salvador for doing this.
Granted, taking leverage on Bitcoin as a nation state is like, well, maybe you shouldn't be giving any more credit in that case.
I wonder if Bitcoin, like, you know, 5 or 10 X's in the next few years. I wonder what the IMF will say.
And then banks are like, hey, guys want to borrow some money?
Yeah. I wonder if this message will change at all. Let's talk about this. I guess this is regulatory related-ish, bank related-ish. Hayden Adams, creator of Uniswap, tweets this out. This week, JP Morgan Chase closed my bank accounts with no notice or explanation. I'm sorry, I'm laughing, Hayden. This has happened to me, okay?
Sorry,
Bank of America, I've gotten canceled by banks as well. He says, I know many individuals and companies who have been similarly targeted simply for working in the crypto industry. Yep. Thanks for making it personal. This part's hilarious to me, David. It's like, Hayden built Uniswap before he was pissed off. Okay. What's he going to do now?
His laser eyes, Hayden Adams. Let's see it. Yeah. Let's see it.
Bad move, Chase, JP Morgan. This is a take from Brian Quintez. What does he say here, David?
He goes, likely a shadow debanking of crypto by the Federal Reserve or the USOCC, Office of the Comptroller. Is that what that is? Examiners with direction from the top. So Brian Quintez, very highly informed individual, says that this is direction from the top.
Former CFTC commissioner, right?
We should. And he says, if the examiner told a bank that a certain customer is too risky and that bank ended that relationship, the bank is contractually prevented from telling that customer why. So I think my take is that, like, they saw Hayden Adams as their customer of their bank. They probably saw his bank account go from, like, zero to plus $1 million very, very quickly. And they were like, we don't like this guy. We're gonna rug pull this guy. This guy's getting too big.
Who is he?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's
just
Uniswap.
He's just a nerdy looking software developer with rainbow socks on. Like, we could rug pull
him. Yeah, what's
he
gonna do about it? We'll just shut down his bank accounts.
Right.
What's he
Meanwhile, all of his wealth is in crypto. Welcome to the bankless world, Hayden.
Yeah, welcome. You're forced to go bankless.
Forced banklessness.
You know, this is unfortunate, right? But this is going to happen more and more. And what it's going to do long term is completely erode the institutional credibility of the banking system. They can just exit Hayden from the banks, right? I mean, people see this. People are smart. They'll know. They're figured it out.
What happens to the money in his account? Like, do they just cut him a check or something?
No, this is what they did for me. They literally cut me a check. They're like, in 30 days, we're going to send you a check. And they sent me a check by mail with the money I had.
They hold on your money for 30 days?
Yeah.
Did they give you interest?
You can't log in. Oh, yeah. Yeah. 0.01% interest, probably. How do you know? Anyway, Mark Zuckerberg, okay? Zuckcoin is dead. You remember Libra? How that was going to take over all of crypto, that Facebook was going to be the blockchain? This was a narrative in 2018, 2019.
People thought that this was going to kill Ethereum. Everybody thinks everything is going to kill Ethereum. Just stop saying that.
Mark Zuckerberg His ambitions unravel around stablecoin Diem sale talks. So they're actually talking about selling Diem itself.
Yep. Whatever the assets are. Yeah, I'm right.
Maybe JP Morgan, you guys could buy that.
Should we buy it, Ryan?
How much? No, I'm not.
I'll offer $5,000.
There you go.
Overpriced.
Zuckerberg, if you're listening, $5,000, Bankless will buy Diem for you, and we'll complete that project. We'll just make it a stable coin on Ethereum like it should have been.
Okay, next one. New York City Mayor Eric Adams receives first paycheck in the form of BTC and ETH. New York City Mayor receiving crypto. Make sure to sign up for Alto IRA, sir.
Nice. That's cool, though. Look, crypto-friendly politicians. It's happening. There's a few of them now. He's trying to boost his ranking on the pack.xyz website. I think that's Eric Adams' strategy here. All right, guys, we will be back with some takes of the week, and there are a few hot ones. Of course, we'll end with the meme of the week as well, so stay tuned for that. Before we do, we want to thank the sponsors that made this episode possible.
Alchemix is a DeFi app that offers self-repaying loans that lets you spend money and save money at the same time. Alchemix allows you to deposit the DAI stablecoin into its vaults, which earns some of the highest yields that DeFi has to offer. You can then take a loan from Alchemix of up to 50% of the deposited DAI, and that loan automatically pays itself back from the yield that is generated from your deposit. It's a savings account that the banks don't want you to know about. Alchemix also has ETH vaults available, so you can get a self-repaying loan that's denominated in ETH. Coming up in Alchemix V2 is a bunch of cool new features, such as credit delegation, multi-chain expansion, and DAO revenue sharing and vote boosting. Alchemix lets you get your interest payments on your deposits paid to you upfront. Check out the power of Alchemix at alchemix.fi, and make sure to join their extremely vibrant Discord if you want to participate in governance or have any questions about the project. If you're going bankless, you need MetaMask. This is your tool to unlock the world of DeFi without giving up custody over your private keys. MetaMask is both a secure in-browser wallet and also a secure bridge for your hardware wallet. You can now trade tokens on any DEX or aggregator. MetaMask Swap gathers real-time pricing information across all the DeFi exchanges, allowing you to select your best price while getting all the MetaMask benefits of self-custody, lower gas costs, and increased transaction success rates. MetaMask also has a fantastic mobile wallet that I use when I'm out and about, which I use to collect POAPs, NFTs, and do all my DeFi things while I'm away from home. If you haven't downloaded MetaMask, you gotta try it out. Web3 wouldn't be the same without it. Download MetaMask for desktop and mobile at metamask.io and load up your Trezor, Ledger, Lattice, or Keystone hardware wallets so that they too can get into the world of Web3. Bankless is proud to be sponsored by Uniswap. Uniswap is a new paradigm in asset exchange infrastructure. Instead of a cumbersome order book system where trades are matched with other humans, Uniswap is an autonomous piece of software on Ethereum that lets you trade any token at the current market price. No human counterparties or centralized intermediaries, just autonomous code on Ethereum. Input the token you want to sell and receive the token you want to buy. The Uniswap Grants Program is accepting applications for grants. Do you have something of value that you think you want to contribute to the Uniswap ecosystem? No matter how big or small your idea is, you can apply for a unique grant at uniswapgrants.org and help steer Uniswap in the direction that you think it should go. Thank you, Uniswap, for sponsoring Bankless.
All right, guys, we are back with the takes of the week. This is the first one. This is something you said in the market section.
Did I rug pull your take, Ryan? Sorry.
No, it's worth repeating. It's that good. Okay.
Okay.
Do you want to read the take?
Yeah, sure. Since I already said it earlier, Ryan Sean Adams says, this isn't 2018. In 2018, crypto died on its own. No macro to blame. The market decided the substance didn't justify the hype. Today is different. In 2022, crypto is crashing alongside all risk on assets. Fed policy caused this. This is a macro shakeout. This winter won't last 2 years. That's great. Fantastic.
I think that's true. I don't think it's going to last. Yeah. I don't think that people are saying it's 2018. I don't think it is.
As soon as the S&P reverses, so does crypto, and it will reverse even harder.
That's right. Yeah. So temporary, maybe. I don't know how long it lasts, but I don't think it's going to be 2018. I don't think it's 2 years. This is something I ran across in the r/anti-work subreddit, which was interesting and sad. There was some drama, by the way, this week in the r/anti-work subreddit. It's 1.6 million subscribers, I believe, to this subreddit. That I guess is out of scope of the podcast, but I ran across this. It's the headline: people no longer believe working hard will lead to a better life, survey shows. I feel like that is very much why r/anti-work got to 1.6 million subscribers. It's because people are fed up, they're tired, they're jaded, they're exhausted, by their shitty corporate jobs or their shitty jobs in general. Okay. And it's led to them feeling like working hard no longer pays. And I guess I just had a thought on it. First of all, like, I understand the sentiment completely, but also it's not that working hard is the problem, is it? It's working hard in the wrong systems. Mm-hmm. That's the problem. The problems are all systemic, yep, yet again. And I've seen so many people that work hard in the right systems. So I would say in crypto, like, it's much more meritocratic at this stage. Yeah. So you work hard, you hustle, you connect with people, you level up, you learn on a weekly basis, you spend time at this, you meet people, you develop some skills. It will pay off. Mm. It will lead to a better life. Like, you will benefit. And so I guess, I don't know if anyone from anti-work is listening, but I think that crypto actually holds some solution to the problem here. People being jaded with their jobs. And isn't it a shame that working hard doesn't lead to a better life now? I think in crypto, it can. This is why we're on this journey as well.
Oh, I subscribe to anti-work crypto, so I'm hearing you, Ryan.
You hear me?
Reframed, this is what Chris Bernisky said when we had him on the podcast, not the ARK podcast, but the one before that, where he said, the returns on capital will always outpace the returns on labor. As in, the stock market is going to go up faster than your biweekly paycheck goes into your bank account. The house totally. Price that you are looking at is going to go up faster than how fast you can work for your money. And so that's why this headline is saying people no longer believe working hard will lead to a better life, because all the assets are outstripped from their hands. And you know why that's an issue is because the Federal Reserve prints a bunch of money. It makes the cost of money easy to benefit all the people with assets. And that's why Ryan is saying that in crypto, your work actually turns into actual capital, because we have a new monetary system with new assets, with new upside. And so it's about this. When Ryan says the systems, I hear it's the assets. So go and work around the assets that are new and novel and working for you, rather than just like your wage slaves that you find in your typical 9-to-5 job.
Absolutely. Well said, David. All right, let's go to the next one. This is Hayden Adams again, firing some tweets this week with a take. The metaverse is having an account, identity, history, digital assets, etc., that can be brought with you wherever you go. That's what the metaverse is, he says. Not a bunch of Zuckerberg 3D avatars that hang out in virtual rooms together.
Click on DC's. DC's response is just this metaverse guy thumbs up, clearly out of like some Facebook thing or something. That's great.
Yeah, it's right, though. I mean, we've said it before in our metaverse episode. The metaverse is about property rights, digital property rights. That's what the metaverse is. It's not like a weird 3D lobby that you hang out.
I'd rather have a 2D lobby, and that's what Zoom is.
Yeah, that's right. By the way, great episode on the metaverse earlier this week, too. If you guys want to, you know, tune into that, we talk about some of these themes. David, let's end this take with this.
Five takes.
Five reasons to be excited for the bear market. You wrote this. This is a post in Market Money and Bankless. I want to be excited about the bear market. Okay, David, tell me, why should I be excited?
This post was so easy to write. And the thoughts I've been having ever since the bull market started is like, oh, wait, the bear market was actually nice. Maybe it's Stockholm Syndrome.
David's been craving the bear market. That's why we're down.
Okay, so here's five reasons to be excited about the bear market. One, long-term wealth. One of the most frustrating things about the bull market and when Ether was like $4,000 plus is I would take my paycheck and I would go to Gemini, and then I would put in the number, and the number of Ether that I would get back from that paycheck would be so goddamn small. I was like, well, what the hell is the point anymore? Like, I can't even move the needle. So that was extremely frustrating. And so now that Ether is like less than half those prices, like your money actually translates into more real money.
More ETH,
actual money. So it's very just much more rewarding to be buying prices when they're lower. And so you actually get to move the needle on the size of your stack. And so I'm looking forward to that again. That's reason number
one. This is when people build generational wealth.
People in the bull markets are trying to get wealthy like inside of 12 months. People in the bear market are trying to make their children's children wealthy. That is the difference.
The secret of the bull market is you actually aren't making the money in the bull market. You make money in the bear market as long as you stay for the bear market after the bull market.
Okay, also, number two, long-term relationships. Financial capital, money, is just one flavor of capital. And this is not something that I realized I was doing during the bear market, but it actually has been the most rewarding thing ever since, which is building social capital. Social capital was one of the best things that I earned in the 2018 to 2020 bear market. What is social capital? That's your friends, your homies, your allies, your business partners. Did you guys know that the way Bankless started was that I got good at Twitter, I got good at writing, I was in Discord all the time, and at some point I realized that there's this nice guy, Ryan, out there, and so nice I DM'd him, Ryan. And I said, hi, and that's how Bankless started. And I have so many friends that I made throughout the 2018-2020 bear market. I'm going to people's weddings in countries, and I was invited to people's weddings before I had ever met them in real life, and that can be true for you too. Build friends in the bear market because you know that those people that are around in the bear market are the long-term people, the long-term thinkers, the people that you want to be around, people that you can actually learn from. So build social capital in the bear market. Just do it.
You can do it over the internet. David and I have never met in person. My mom still doesn't believe that. Oh, yeah. Well, what's next, David?
Yeah, this lends itself to the same one. The amount of signal during a bear market is significantly higher than the amount of noise. Bull markets are noise-dominated markets. Bear markets are signal-dominated markets. There are tons of projects that exist in bull markets that exist on just attention and attention alone, not fundamentals. And that is opposite of what's true in bear markets. Bear markets are only times that only projects with strong fundamentals can survive. And so just the amount of alpha that you get comes to you. And like, it's kind of shocking. Like, oh wait, this is just straight pure alpha. And like, the reason why no one's taking advantage of this is because it's the bear market. Like, all the bull market tourists are gone and they're leaving all of the value on the table for me. That's what should be your attitude should be. Next one up is building. Just long story short, Bankless started in the bear market. It's easier to build in the bear market. Things are quieter. You can put your heads down. You can concentrate. You can think more clearly. There's not a new pumping dog token to like pay attention to. It's just easier to build in the bear market. And as a founder, you can find talent better because other people are also in there for the right reasons. They actually care for the right reasons. And then lastly, also overall, the net effect of all of these things is that crypto gets stronger. Crypto itself is anti-fragile. What doesn't kill us makes us stronger. And at this point in crypto's lifespan, there's no way to kill it. We've already won. We have already won the game. It's just a matter of time for waiting for the rest of the world to realize it. And so think about what, while you are going through this bear market, which I don't think lasts all that long, so you have 6 months to do all of these things, what friends will you make? What will you help build? What skills will you develop? What reasons will you create to make you stay in crypto? And so that is why I look forward to building throughout all this bear market with you, if it is really bear, of which I'm not convinced.
Well said, though. So David is bullish on the bear market.
That's the bottom line.
And he's hopefully he's made you more bullish, too. Mm-hmm. David, what are you excited about? Besides the bear market, which you seem to be very excited about.
Okay, I have three things that I'm super excited about, Ryan. One of them, I was quoted in the Washington Post, and I was actually just kind of like cracking up with the Washington Post. Some of the quotes I had that they decided to use, I think, were
goodbye
hilarious.
To all non-believers, says David Hoffman.
Co-owner of Bankless tweeted on Sunday as prices continue to plummet.
Listen to this. We were all born in the bear market, so finally we're back home. David says, noting Ethereum is now worth $2,400, and last time it was $80.
Oh, God.
Yeah. I love this, man. Mm-hmm. It's a great article. Bankless in the Washington Post.
And to summarize it up, I say, obviously, no one is happy to see their portfolio shrink 40% in 7 days, but it's a question of, do you believe that crypto is the dominant financial platform of the future?
My man calling for conviction.
Yeah, that's
what
I'm
doing. Who's convicted out there?
Mm-hmm. All right. Sorry. Next thing I'm excited about, Ryan, is this link that I just sent you in Zoom, if you want to pull that up, is I finally set up my gallery so you can check out all my NFT displays. I'm going to wait for Ryan to pull this up. There we go. Boom. Gallery.so. I recommend that you guys sign up for it
because
it's a great way.
Are these the crypto covens?
These are the crypto covens, of which I think are fantastic. Pure straight royalty. There's also my CryptoPunk. This is my NFT PFP section. There's my CryptoPunk, my cool cat, my couple of penguins, and also the DAO punks out of Bankless DAO. But then also, if you keep on scrolling down, those are my one of ones from Nate Moeller, who I'm super bullish on. And these are just fantastic. And then if you go down, you have my metaverse plants. I love plants of all types, including metaverse plants. so I'm just excited that I got Gallery up and running. And then
this is awesome. How hard was that?
Super easy. It's super easy. Just had to sign in with my Ethereum address.
Might have to do this.
And then the last thing I'm excited about is the Layer Zero that's coming out on Tuesday, of which I did an interview with the two founders of The Boys Club. And The Boys Club is all about onboarding women into Web3.
So it's not what it sounds like, guys.
And it's a really funny name, and they really lean into the humor behind it. So if you are a lady who is looking to find other ladies to use lady-specific language and just, you know, onboard people that you know of that are of your vibe into Web3, Boys Club is for you. Check out the Layer Zero that's coming out on Tuesday. And if you are a dude who's trying to get your lady friend into crypto, maybe send them to the Boys Club.
Send them to the Boys Club. Yeah. That's awesome, man.
Thank you for bearing with me through my three things, Ryan. What are you excited about?
Look, I'm excited to show you my gallery.so turtle collection pretty soon because I'm going to fire this baby up.
I'm excited. I'll be excited to see it, Ryan.
You know, the real thing I was excited about was I'm back to this blockscan.com chat, okay? Because this was, I think, the first time where I actually used my ETH address as an identity, like to log in and interact with somebody else who also had an ETH address. And there's some fun use case. This is a silly app, but there's some fun use cases from this, like, you know, support emails for something, you know, you ship an NFT. How do you verify that the person who's owning the NFT is on the other side of a support message? This could work for that. Also, like, you know, talking to hackers, for instance. But also, if like I see an NFT in your gallery that I like, maybe instead of going through OpenSea, I just like, I message you on this. I'm like, David, I want to buy some flowers.
Hey dude, gonna... like 0.2 ETH for that. And I'm like, no, point Ryan, two ETH.
I'm like, I'll give you 0.2 ETH and two turtles. And you're like, yes.
No, I'm like, no.
This is cool. And it just reminded me of like the AOL Instant Messenger days. And really excited to see that. It was just a lot of fun too. A bunch of people reached out and said how much they, you know, love Bankless, all these messages. I can't wait for all the spam that's going to be incoming in the future. So I'm sure, you know, Etherscan will add features and make it cooler over time. But it was great.
New versions of Nigerian prince messages.
Well, it's like, look, your ETH address is not just a bank account. It's also your digital identity. And I think this is one small application. We did say, I think 2022 is going to be a breakout year for some early use cases people don't anticipate.
Non-financial use cases of your private keys.
Yep. That's it. All right, meme of the week time. Let's get to it.
Here we go.
What do we got? Lynn Alden.
Lynn Alden with a meme that almost got 10,000 likes on Twitter. It'll probably be 10,000 likes by this time tomorrow. This is a Simpsons meme of Grandpa Simpson talking to all the kids. And Grandpa Simpson says, back then, the whole world would stop and listen to one guy say what he was going to do with the price of money. This is what's happening. This is why we're talking about a bear market, is because everyone's talking about what is the Federal Reserve going to make the money more expensive, or is it going to make the money more cheap? And everyone's super fearful that the old guys at the Federal Reserve are going to make the money more expensive. And the thing I love about this the most is it just strips the way of the curtain. It's the emperor without the ropes. This is ridiculous that we listen to these old people behind closed doors talk to us about what the price of money is. Just let the money price itself. It's good at that.
Yeah, it's definitely what we do. And the way they analyze Jerome Powell's every word and like gesture and, you know, intonation is painful as well.
It's insane that we do that. It's insane.
I hope we're not still doing it 70 years from now. Yeah. Guys, stay tuned right after this for your moment of Zen. Thanks a lot. It's not for everyone.
Down bad like Solana, never lost a comma. Constantly refreshing TVLs on DeFi Llama. I only catch knives when I'm trying to catch a bounce from my savings on a JPEG when I really need a house. Need a tax harvest? I got L's I could lend you. Portfolio pegged to the freaking dollar menu.
You're headed west. This is the frontier. It's not for everyone, but we're glad you're with us on the Bankless journey. Thanks a lot.
But of course, gotta remind you, none of this has been financial advice. ETH and Bitcoin are risky. DeFi is risky as well. Sometimes it's extra risky and full of drama, but we are headed west. This is the frontier. It's not for everyone, but we're glad you're with us on the Bankless journey. Thanks a lot.